how it's going to be. But the goal is to try and figure out how we can make the Seder more meaningful for ourselves, for the kids, for our own kids, especially when they get a little bit older, and also just in general. You know, it doesn't have to be your Seder. Most people here are going to be wearing the away jerseys for the Seder. But you don't have to be the owner of the Seder to make the Seder awesome. And I think with a couple of small tweaks, you could really make it a super Seder for yourself and for your kids. So we're going to use that as my blackboard in a few minutes. But I think the first questions that we need to ask ourselves are, well, why are we making a Seder in the first place? What's the purpose of the Seder? Why make a Seder? Right, to remember. But the question is, could you just open a book and read it to yourself and you would remember it?
The idea is to be together.
Okay, so we could all sit around together. And
well, the Jews always include food.
Okay, great. It's going to include food. So. Awesome. I don't know how many of you ever do road trips to the East Coast.
Road trips.
It's great. So we will, on occasion, our family, some of them live on the East Coast, so we'll do a road trip. And the one year we drove through Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia has a great museum, especially for little kids like your kids' age. It's called the Please Touch Museum.
Awesome.
The Please Touch Museum. So what's the whole point of the Please Touch Museum, right?
To touch everything.
That they can touch everything. Because you learn differently when you learn through experience. Right?
Yeah.
Why do people spend a lot of time, and this actually what we said about this questionably, to go on the March of the Living, to support the Polish economy and the Ukrainian economy, why do people go there? So what's the answer? Because experiencing it in real time in a place is very different than just having somebody teach it to you from a book. So the purpose of the Seder is to be experiential. It's an experiential educational experience. That's the goal of the Seder. That's why we make a Seder. Why do you have to have all the food? And, you know, you can't just tell the story. You have to have matzah and maror in front of you when you tell the story. So there's a whole experience that you're supposed to go through. There's the smell, there's the song, there's like the feel of it. So it's, number one, we make a Seder because we want it to be experience. That's why you have to taste certain foods. You know, the Talmud even discusses if you could put something in a capsule form and swallow it, that wouldn't work for maror. Because you're not tasting the bitterness. So the whole point is that you should have an experience. So why do you need this experience? What are you trying to teach? What are you trying to teach the people at your Seder? What are we trying to learn? What are we trying to tell our kids? So I think the long and the short of it is that we are living with God. That's the punchline of the Seder. If we don't walk away with that, so then we miss the big point of the Seder. We're telling a whole story. How you made it. We're telling the story because we believe in God who took our people out of Egypt and shepherded our nation all the way till today. So, number one, we are going through this experiential story so we can reinforce the idea that there is a God. But not only that, that there is a personal God. And that's why we say it's important that we see ourselves as if we left Egypt. We have to see it as if we are leaving Egypt. So if you go to some Sephardic Seder, there will be people running around with matzah on their shoulder as if they literally left Egypt. Because the point is that God isn't just some abstract concept. God is a real personable entity in your life, and that's supposed to be the takeaway of the Seder. And if you don't teach that experientially, so it's not going to be conveyed fully. It's just going to be kind of a dry book. But the other idea about that is that if you have this personal relationship, it comes through somewhere. So I have folders for everybody because you're going to have to keep a bunch of things. The first thing that I'm going to give you is a green piece of paper. It's going to be entitled From High on the Mountain to Highland Park. Hold on to this. It's based on a simple website called simpletoremember.com, and you can actually follow the story. You can trace the tradition of the Torah from this living room, from the Yaffe living room right here in Highland Park, all the way to the mountain at Sinai, uninterrupted. You know, you think about the Seder, and we talk about the idea of connection, of passing this tradition from one generation to the next. You know, v'higadata l'milcha, we tell our kids. But we have to remember that we're not actually telling our kids a theoretical fairy tale. There's actually a historical precedent for what we're telling them. The story of the Exodus is actually a truth. It's a historical truth that was passed down from generation to generation. We're looking here at a list of rabbis that date all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu, who left Egypt with the people over the last several thousand years to, you see at the bottom in the italics, those are the teachers of mine who received the tradition from the previous generation, to whom are living, Rabbi Herschel Schachter and Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz, who lives here in Chicago, and Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, who just passed away in Israel, who taught it to me, who's sharing it with you tonight. So you might think, you know, we're sitting at the Seder table, it's like, you know, it's a great story, it's interesting, we're going to eat crunchy matzah and think about it, but it's a lot more than that. There's actually a tradition that's passed down from our parents and our teachers that goes all the way back to Moses at Sinai. So this is what we're trying to pass along. We're trying to make sure that we get the experiential lesson that there is a God, He took us out of Egypt, He takes care of us personally, He's part of our lives, and we're going to pass that story along. So then the question becomes, I get that, it's great to have a personal God, that's really good, but what does that have to do with all of the laws of the Seder? You know, the Seder has a lot of laws. If we go, this is our first little slide here, which is hard to see a little bit, but if you go closer afterwards, you'll see, and I have a card that'll share this with you, you actually have to drink and eat a certain number of things, a certain amount of size at the Seder. You have to drink 4 cups of wine that have to be at least, let's say, 3.5 or 4 ounces. You can't just have a little shot glass. And you have to eat a matzah, a piece of matzah, what's called a kazayit of matzah, an olive shape of matzah. You have to eat maror. And you wonder to yourself, like, do we really need all the details? Like, it's a lot of details with the, you know, koshering my kitchen for Pesach. Okay? There's a reason that some of us don't stay home. Some of us sacrifice. We are the Paschal lamb in our family. We are, right, the sacrifice. But making your kitchen kosher for Passover is a complicated story. There's so many details. You wonder, like, why are there so many details? Why don't we just, I got the chart here. From high on the mountain to Island Park, we'll tell our kids, well, you know what we could do great for second graders? We'll have a line. We'll have all the kids. Everybody will pick one person. We've done this actually as an exercise with high school students. You line everybody up. One person is Moses. The other person is going to be Amy on the other end. We're going to get all the rabbis in the middle. We're going to connect Moses to you. And that will call a night. And everybody can, you know, go to sleep on time. Like, why do you need all the details? So here is the key aspect of the Seder and of Pesach in general. In a certain sense, the love, the relationship with the personal God is really in the details. I've been married for 13 years, and there are two ways that I could acknowledge my wife's birthday. Today, it's really easy. You can pay somebody online, you can fill out, you know, some form, you can give them your PayPal account, and they will write a card, probably a very nice card. They'll order something very expensive. They'll have it delivered on time. And I have made use of these services very often in my married life. But there's a difference between that, where you'll get a generic card that you didn't write, and a gift that you didn't think about, that some, you know, on some top 10 registry on People magazine of gifts to give for your birthday, versus me going to a website that I know that my wife shops at, because I know that she likes that, and picking out something that she would want based on what I know that she likes, and me writing a card talking about something about her that's important to her, that says something to her. So I'm the only man in the room, so maybe I'm missing the boat on this one, but I think that if you had to vote between A and B, A is, I mean, it's not sleeping in the living room, but, you know, you're not scoring a lot of points with A, because it's not personal. There's no detail there. You just drop your PayPal account and there's nothing else. But if you really think about it, if you actually think about, you know, my wife actually likes tulips. She likes tulips more than she likes, you know, she likes hydrangeas. But like, if you know that about somebody, so then that's where you can show what you really appreciate about them. And that's where you can develop the relationship. So if I have a relationship with God, the mitzvot that he gives me, they're actually ways, what's that?
It depends what's on that registry.
Okay. Right, but the point is that you're paying attention to what's on their registry. That's another good analogy here. You know, if you sign up for a registry, and instead of looking at your registry, I just buy something off a rack somewhere, you're going to be like, what the heck, I have a registry. God says, I want to have a relationship with you. So I'm going to give you a registry. Here's a registry. Maimonides will write it down for us. Today, you can click on it. These are the things that are going to build a relationship together. So you can view them as burdensome. You know, you can view your wife's registry as burdensome. Or you can say, what my wife is actually doing is doing me a favor. Because what happens when I'm in a crisis? I need to find something, and usually I'm at a loss. So sometimes I'll call Tammy, and sometimes I'll call my sister-in-law, Shoshi. Or, you know, there are people who can help in the case of emergency. But wouldn't it be much nicer if I just knew what she wanted? What would, you know, what would make that connection? And that's what the mitzvot are all about. So the reason why we have so many laws in general, and especially when it comes to the Seder, you have a million laws because these are ways to develop a specified type of relationship. So that's number one. And the same thing is true for time. You notice that time on Pesach is very important. There's a comedian who just performed at APAC. I wasn't at APAC because I had been traveling too much recently, but I have a brother-in-law who went to APAC, and he took some videos of this comedian, Ilan Gold, who's a funny guy. You have heard some of his other, you can find his stuff on YouTube. So he's a great comedian. He has a lot of great bits. And a lot of them, some of the stuff that he used at APAC, you can find on YouTube. So he had a great bit about time. And you know what? I never thought about this. Did anybody ever go into the office? You know, Emily, I don't know if how many of your colleagues are Jewish. Some of them are not Jewish, I suspect. Did you ever go into the office and somebody, one of your non-Jewish colleagues, said to you, like, in the beginning of January, said, you know, Martin Luther King Day, it starts next Sunday at 5:28 p.m. and it finishes on Monday at 6:17 p.m. Did anybody ever do that?
No.
No one does that.
No.
It's not like July 4th. Everybody's looking at the what time does it start? What time does it end? Right? The day before the Seder, what is everybody doing? Everybody's looking at your watch. You're like, well, what time does it start? What kind can I eat from it still? You know, I'm like scarfing it down. There's this Israeli group of comedians, and they do little skits making fun of all the crazy things that we do. So there's one guy who finds on Erev Pesach, the day before Passover, he finds a package of wafers, and all he's going is from his watch to his iPhone, exactly what time it is, and he's trying to find the matches, he's trying to burn the stomachs as fast as he can, and the match keeps going out, and the wafers and the matches finally, he's like stuffing it all in his mouth, faster! Like his faster, like looking at his watch, it's 10:47! And then you step back and you're like, like, I'm stuffing wafers to my mouth because it's got to get done before 10:47. You say to yourself, this sounds crazy. Like, if a normal person saw you do that, they'd be like, 10:47 or 10:48? What's the difference? But if we understand that this is all about building a relationship with a meaningful God in your life, you say, wait a second. Actually, these things do matter. You ever go to O'Hare and you say to yourself, you know what? 10:47 or 10:48, does it really matter?
It doesn't, O'Hare.
Well, okay, good. Milwaukee, it matters. Right? We oftentimes think about time in Judaism, and we don't realize that it's, number one, it's part of a system. If every flight in O'Hare was like, you know what? 10:47 or 10:48, does it really matter? The answer is, to the airlines, it absolutely matters. I don't know if anybody realizes this, these airlines calculate every minute that their planes sit in the airport costs them money. So what they try to do, this is why you ever have these boarding groups, you get group one, group two. Why do they do that? They have all kinds of complicated, they spend millions of dollars on algorithms figuring out what's the quickest way to board a plane. So if, let's say, the plane has 32 rows and it has the window seats, so the back window seats in certain airlines are going to board first. Because they want those people on, because otherwise, if those people board later, you're clogging the aisle. So when your flight from O'Hare to Albuquerque is at 10:52, it's not at 10:51. Because if it was at 10:51, they wouldn't have enough time. And it's not at 10:55, because those 3 minutes matter. So we need to make sure that when we're thinking about Judaism, we're thinking about Pesach, it's the same way. It's a system. Everything interweaves. That's one piece of it. But it's much deeper than that. The same way, when you think about a relationship and it's in the details, it's also a lot about time. Relationships are a lot about time. Right? It's about how much time can we spend together. You know, when you take an engaged couple, for example, for some of us that's ancient history, but not so ancient history for others. You take an engaged couple. What's the problem with an engaged couple? They're totally zoned out. They are disconnected from life. You cannot talk to them. You try to talk. You think you're talking to them, but they're really not talking to you. They're really somewhere else. So what's their biggest challenge? They're trying to squeeze out every minute with that other person. Right? And many of us have been in that circumstance where, you know, just another 5 minutes. You say, what's the difference? 5 minutes more, 5 minutes less? No, but to us it matters. I don't want to go home just yet. Those few minutes, that time, really does matter. You know, I still remember when we were engaged, my wife and I were engaged, I was traveling overseas. I was doing some teaching somewhere. And we got to, at that time it was after September 11th, so we went to the security line, and I was like standing there like till the last second until I could run through security before the door would close on me. And after I went through security, like I was standing there crying, and the TSA agent said, don't worry, honey, don't come back, which was very nice. She said that, and I did come back. But why was I watching the clock? Why was I watching the clock? The answer is because I wanted to spend every minute that I could before I had to fly off to Scotland. It's far away. And you have an intense relationship. That's the other way to look at time in Judaism. You know, because for us, when we can grasp that time, that's significant, that creates meaning in our lives. So we're going to watch every minute the same way that I want to catch every minute that I have in front of my in-laws' house. They used to have, now they have a new one, they used to have an old glider, you know, two seats that we kind of move, and they live in Miami. So glider, Miami, it's a great place to sit. Not in the summertime, but in the wintertime, it's a great place to sit. You want every minute that you can catch on the glider. So these are some of the things that when you think about the Seder through this lens, it's less about, wow, this is just a big job. And more about, wait a second, there's a lot of meaning here in the details and in the way that I observe it. And if I think about it in advance, I could really make something of it. So that's all the background that's going to get us into some of the practical things that we can do to make a super Seder. So let's start. Let's start here.
Just in time.
Okay. Yeah. Everything was just the beginning. So let's start with our first slide, and that's the most important thing about a Seder, and that's to be prepared. You know, sometimes we're so busy taking care of our kids or our families or our in-laws or our parents that we don't actually give ourselves a chance to prepare. And it's really important because part of making the Seder meaningful and not just like the end of a marathon of exhaustion is preparing to say, well, is there something that's important to me? Is there a part of the Seder that I really enjoy that I want to be able to research? Or is there a part of the Seder that I want to be able to convey to my kids that, you know, I never have a chance to think about? So the same way that I'm going to make time for shopping and for cooking and for talking, I've got to make time to prepare. There are some really great websites called SimchatYechiel.com. I can send this to you afterwards. There's a whole group of websites that you can go on to find some ideas to prepare and make the Seder meaningful. So that's the first thing that you need to do to take your Seder to the next level is to prepare. The second thing that you can do has to do with incentivizing people at the Seder. So different people have different practices of how to do this. I'll share with you my favorite way of doing this. I'll share with you a lot of things tonight, but this is one of them. I'm not sure if the U.S. Treasury likes this or not, but I will prepare these. These are sheets of pre-printed Seder shekels. I'll pass them around. You cut them out and print them at FedEx or your local. You can pay for them, pass them. And then,
oh yeah, I'll give them a in your orders.
So you can use this for the kids or anybody else in your Seder. You want to incentivize people in your Seder. So our kids, you can keep some. You can just keep them. So if anybody wants to keep some of them, whatever. You use these and you can make your own. This one, I mean, these are a little bit old, but this is from a couple of years ago. This is when we had four kids. So you can use your own Now we have five. You can use your own creativity in incentivizing people at your Seder. And if you're at your parents' Seder or in-law's Seder, if you talk to them in advance, they may not care, or they may want this idea, they never thought of it. So more, and I want you to know, the funny thing is that these actually work with adults, not just kids. You know, if you can bring like a fun, what's that?
She wants to upload it, so she can make it.
You should like to upload these onto the co-op website.
Yeah, I have a link. You can download.
Oh, really?
I'll send it to you afterwards, yeah.
And you can't leave me.
Yeah. You can keep those, but I'll afterwards. If you wrote your name down, I'll send you a link to a lot of the stuff here that you can make your own. It's not so complicated. I'm the least technology.
Emily, you should do that for the same.
Advise.
Wait, Emily. No, that's fine. Emily's not doing anything else for the same.
Okay.
So,
you can do it.
Exactly. So you print these out, you give them to somebody at the Seder, and it's a great way to incentivize. Anytime a kid asks a good question, or find something, or, you know, there are lots of ways. And then what we'll do is, we'll also use this for behavior. If no one's spitting at each other for 5 minutes, so you'll get one. You get a Seder Shekel. The other thing about these is
what
you...
What are the Seder Shekels getting?
Exactly. So you are the parent. Yeah. Don't forget, at the end of the day,
don't forget that part.
You're still the parent, which means you get to decide how much these things are worth. So the way we did it last year was, we, depending on how many you give out, you'll probably want to decide. So you never tell them in advance. Do not tell them in advance. The last year we said, okay, if the kids, over the course of the 2 nights, they racked up 50 or 60 or 100, that's not a big deal, so we'll make it equivalent. It was like a little, also educational for Israel. However much the shekel is to the dollar, that's how much these are worth. So last year was about 35 cents a piece. So if you had, you know, you would convert as if they were shekels to dollars, and after that you can use it on Amazon or Toys R Us or Target or wherever you're going to go. So the first thing to think about is how to incentivize your kids. The next thing that you can do are these. Okay. This is not so complicated. I'm going to give everybody their own, and you have folders so you can keep these. I found a YouTube website thing, video, how to make raffle tickets. Everyone loves raffles. Everybody loves raffles. So it's not so complicated. You go on your YouTube tutorial. It takes you 6 minutes. You make this sheet. Then you cut the sheets into little pieces. And then you take the little pieces and you break them in half. So you have the numbers that go together with the top part of the number. So what I'm going to pass around here for your books, everybody can take a pack if you like. Are you ready to catch?
Nope.
I wasn't worried. So you'll notice on each one of these things, I updated them for this year. See this in. Everybody loves raffles. So what you do is you just cut them up. They're numbered. You have like 120 tickets here. And if somebody asks a question or you want to utilize it somehow, somebody gets a ticket, you cut them up before Yom Tov and you keep track of them. You put one in a hat or a paper bag or whatever it is, and at the end of the Seder you do a raffle. And I'll tell you how we use
these. What's the prize?
What's that? Again, it's all about the incentive. So you come up with a prize, but here, that's just your pre-made raffle tickets if you want to use them. So that's the first thing, having incentives. That's number one. Okay? Next thing is, you may want to decorate your Seder. Sometimes this could be fun, especially if you want to do this for like a scavenger hunt. So there's a guy, I could send you the link. His name is Rabbi John Green. He comes up with the most fantastic, creative... I don't know if you could see it. So he's got your vacating Egypt signs. He has the clothing for the desert store. He has baby nurse for Moses, hieroglyphics. It's my favorite. Nachshon Ben Aminadav swimming school jumping in to cross the sea. He's got like a whole series of these things. So you download these, you put them up at the Seder, or you put them in some like secret place and you have the kids give them an activity to look and find them. It's fun. You know, they're not falling asleep if you can find ways to make the space a little more inviting. So that's the second thing. So you use your incentives. You talk about the posters. Songs. Every family's got their songs. There's no song that's too ridiculous. This is great. There's a rabbi. His name is Rabbi Benjamin Blech.
So he has a book called The Passover Book, and he has a Take Me Out to the Seder song. If your family is into the Cubs, this is probably the year for you. Or he has I've Been Working on the Railroad, or you just have your own family songs, and those things create memories. So if you're not a singing family, it's okay. You don't have to be the Von Trapps to make like a Pesach Seder meaningful. But thinking about what kind of fun and creative songs you can use for your kids, especially for the younger kids, can make the Seder much more enjoyable. Let's keep going. What's that? Here we go. Empowering different people at the Seder. If your Seder looks like this, it may be going south really fast. Because if your kid is holding an upside down Haggadah, and the person who's leading the Seder can't read Hebrew, and you're just looking at each other thinking, the kid's like, I don't belong here. This is not for me. You have to find ways that everybody is involved. You gotta empower people at the Seder, and even before the Seder. So that means, you know, depending on who's involved in your Seder, people feel more invested if they participate. So if you're coming to somebody's Seder, make sure that everybody has a job, whether it means shopping for the Seder or setting the table. This is sometimes things that kids can do, and they also feel like they own the Seder. You can have place cards for your Seder. You don't need place cards, it's only 7 people. But if everybody feels like they have a little place at the Seder, you know, the kid feels good about that. They feel like, this is my Seder. Saying something about the Seder, the puppets are always good for little kids. So empowering people is very important for the Seder. Let's keep moving. Games. Okay. This is one of the very important parts of your Seder. Thinking about games. This is a great one. I'm going to pass these around. You can keep these. I won't throw those. Okay. Tell me what that game is.
Charades.
Nope. Take a look at it carefully.
Bingo?
Nope. How many people recognize this game?
Are they individual cards?
Or how many are we supposed to take? Just one?
You can take one, you can take them all, whatever it is. You'll see.
Oh, they're
different. They're all different.
So, bingo.
Nope. It's not bingo.
That's what I said.
Nope.
That's what we teach your 6 are cards
for 5 years. Oh, there's like a lot of them.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Taboo.
Nope.
Zingo.
Headbands.
Oh, headbands.
Oh, so fun.
Okay. This is great for adults. Great for adults. This is like the best. This is the best icebreaker for adults. Love it. The Seder's starting to get boring. It's starting to get slow. For those who actually have the headbands game, it's really good. You cut this out. You see we made this on cardstock. You cut it out. Everybody gets one. How do you play?
I've never actually played it. You put it on the headband. I can't believe you put it on your head. They give you a
clue.
Yeah.
So here's a great way to engage all the people at your Seder, even the adults. People will do this. People will totally do this at your Seder. Right? You pick up a bunch of cards, you print them on cardstock so they don't fall off. If you buy the headbands game on Amazon, it's like $10. So you have these little plastic headbands, you stick it in. So mine says, I am Pharaoh, but I can't see that. So I have to ask you, am I a person? Am I a place? Am I a thing? You know, where am I from? Am I eaten?
Okay, got it.
Here's your question. There's so much ground to cover during the Seder. How do you incorporate that? When? Then getting back on track to get to where you need to be.
Okay, so that's a really important question. How do you modulate covering ground? You know what it's like in a certain sense? It's like being a teacher. You know, sometimes the school will tell you, you have to cover this amount of curriculum. The challenge is that if we only focus on covering ground, by the time we get to the end of the Seder, no one will have really learned anything, and no one will have walked away with the experience that we're trying to give them. So what we need to do, it goes back to the first thing that we said, which is prepare. Meaning, I'm going to map out my Seder this year. I'm going to say, okay, this is where I'm going to put my first game. This is where I'm going to put my second game. This is where I'm going to explain in the English. This is where I'm just going to zip through it because I'm going to focus on it the second night. So if you balance it out, you can hopefully find what works for your family. You know, depending, if you have a lot of little kids, it's different than if you have a lot of adults. Depending on the makeup of your Seder. And also, some people, they just want to run through it. They're not interested in this whole shtick with the games, with the thing. They're not into that. But a lot of us, And even adults, if we give them the chance, they would do it. They just don't have the tools. No one ever sat with them and said, you know, you could do this. It would be fun. So I think what you probably want to do is make an outline for yourself before the Seder. You say, you know what? This game is going to go at this point in the Seder. This is when people are starting to lose interest a little bit. I'm going to put a game here. Or I'm going to put a point of explanation. You know, and think about how long your Seder takes. Who's going to be at your Seder? And, you know, the time is going to control the content depending on who it is and how they are going to react to it. So you'll plan ahead and then you'll play it by ear. If people are really excited and engaged, so you try to use these as tools. So you could be going through the Seder and you say, okay, the four sons, who's the first, who's the second, who's the third, who's the fourth, and whoever answers that gets your raffle tickets. And that's going to keep them going, you know, for the little small questions that you're going to give them over the course of the Seder. So you may not want to spend too much time on one point. You want to spread it out over the course of the Seder. So it's not really an answer, but I think if you prepare in advance and you strategize, you know who's going to be at your Seder, it'll help you figure it out. So there is a lot to cover, but you know what? Sometimes understanding the themes and the experience of the Seder, you know, especially the section of the Drashot, the Aramid Ovidavi, which is really long. So that's, you know, for most people, that's a time when you need to infuse it with some more energy, because otherwise they're gone. They're like, you know, they're in the kitchen, they're talking, they're leaving, they're not here. So we got to find ways. Think about in advance, what are some good questions that I can ask, even if it's a search, a word search. You know, we're going to say the next 10 pages of the Haggadah, instead of just staying in the words, let's find the following keywords. Let's find the keywords in this theme, and let's pick them out. Whoever finds them, they're going to get the first Seder dollar, they're going to get 10 Seder dollars. If you get all 10, you find all 10. You know, so thinking about it in advance. Let's go to another good one. This is very exciting for those of us who used to... I don't know how much you guys played Risk growing up. Risk? No. Barbie dolls? What, like, no Risk? No Risk. Risk is very good. Risk, in the old days, they used to have... Now they still have Risk cards, but they have a little different. You played Risk growing up?
Yeah, my kids played.
So, you know they have three different kinds of cards, right? So they have the soldier ones, and then the cannon one, and then the cavalry one. So how does it work? How do you turn in your Risk cards? You either have to get three of the same, or one of each. So another way to do this is to make your own Risk cards. So let's say in our Risk cards, in our the ones that I put together, I have sheep, always a winner, matzahs, and then maror. So you can put them into a deck, you cut them up, you make them on cardstock. Again, all these you can take and keep. I'll send you the link afterwards, you can download it. You ask the person at the Seder, or you have your stack of Risk cards, and they get the top one. So they're keeping their stack with them. You get one matzah, you got two matzahs, I'm waiting for the next matzah. Oh, the next one I got was a maror. Okay, I'm going to hold maror. Now all I need is a sheep, and I fit it in with the next one. So it's another way of asking the questions in a way that keeps people engaged. So you're thinking about it through a different frame, and you make your own questions. Here's another one I didn't bring for you tonight, but it's very easy. You can make it on your own. Seder Connect 4, especially for younger kids or for people who get bored. You make your own boards. It takes you 5 seconds. You can do it on Microsoft Word. You get the same. The Seder is 15 steps plus the word HaSeder, which you get that as a free pass. And then what you can do is, I have this, which is awesome. You can buy this on Amazon. It's a really great pickup. It's a treasury of activities and stuff. A lot of these games and ideas I got from this. They have a Haggadah. They have a book. And in addition, they give you a CD where you can download and print tons of stuff. Games and pictures and things. So imagine you print out, they have a sheet with one picture for every step of the Seder. So you have your pictures of every step of the Seder, and each kid has their Connect 4 board. This is especially good for people who, you know, you want to get them connected, but they're not so interested, they're not going to be focused. So while everybody else is reading, you're talking about, you have to know who's coming to your Seder. While everybody else is reading, you might be just doing Seder Bingo, right? Or Seder Connect 4, depending on whatever you call it. You've got the scavenger hunt. This is big. I'm very into that. So sometimes the kids, they're getting antsy. The adults want to talk about something, so they get up. You know, the kids, you get them running around the house. They're looking for stuff, so you could put things around the house. The bingo board, the spinner. How many people played Twister? Twister?
Yeah.
Great. So if you have one, so what you can do is, this won't hurt anybody, you rip out the middle of the spinner thing, that plastic piece that spins around, and then you take the board and you print something and you just put it on top, and then you put the spinner back on. So you put the spinner on the middle of the table, and you have printed out before, you have section one, section two, section three, section four, different topics that you want to talk about. And everybody at the Seder gets to spin the thing, and then it lands on one topic. It says 10 plagues. So you'd have a chance to talk about the 10 plagues. Yeah.
Do everyone's name.
Everybody's name.
It's
who speaks next?
Read.
Right, your turn to read. Your turn to lead. Yeah.
That's cute.
That's totally great. So the point is, think about the stuff that we already have, or you can buy at the local Target for $15 that you can transform it. I am telling you, you can use some of these things. You know, in my in-law Seder, there are, thank God, a lot of people. There are a lot of like different families that are there together. So we share these with other families because the kids love it. The incentives. You can go right here. Someone introduced me to the best store in the history of ever. It's called U.S. Toy Company. I never knew this until one of the local people in Skokie told me about it.
Oh, you closed. Get...
What?
Yeah.
What?
You can call them chocolate there anymore.
You closed
it.
It
says it was for 40 years recently.
Oh my God. Yeah. What am I going to do for Pesach? Last year I bought every tchotchke under the sun.
Yeah,
oh, so
Oriental
now,
yeah,
Oriental Training or Amazon.
Someone told me they went there, I think. It was close. It just said
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's hard. Yeah. All right, so games. This is another one. Changing it up.
Store,
like, what's that?
They still have like
the 99 cents for 500 things. Right. Changing it up. You're used to doing the Seder a certain way. How many people have ever used bananas for karpas?
Never heard of that.
Why can't you? Bananas are borei pari ha'adama because they grow from the ground. They don't actually grow on a tree. They just grow on a shoot. And the problem is that every year, part of our challenge is that we do the Seder the same way. So you're going to come to the Seder and you're like, I did this 15 years already. I did this 25 years. Where's the new? What's different, right? We're always asking what's different about this. The problem is it's not different. We've done the same thing. Well, you could try something different.
But isn't there value in that? Like, doesn't that kind of negate what you said about,
yes,
like, telling the story for years? Like, I mean, I'm a purist, but I don't know, like, there's something to be said for...
100%.
You,
so I would say...
Did you give the banana its dollar?
Yes. Oh, it's great. And if you imagine, like, a barbell, like, working out at the gym because you're a slave, so you have two bananas on the sides of a toothpick.
Oh.
Which also reminds you of the servitude. But anyway, going back to the core point, which
I'm
is that...
I'm making that. I know, right? I'm for that.
So the answer is yes.
Totally.
You have to go... There are certain things that you want to stick with them because... Year in and year out, they create, you know, a feeling and association. Like, we're going to sing V'hisha Amda the same way every year just because. And even when there's a new tune, you want to use the new tune, fine. We're going to use it after the old tune. And we're going to sing the templates the same way that we did. So I think it's important to be able to have things that you do year in and year out that are great, but it's also good to change things up. So I think it's not one or the other. If every year your Seder is totally different, I think it's a problem. Because then you don't have the continuity that you want. You know, yes, the same jokes, you have to use the same old jokes. That, you know, what was funny one year that one kid did in your family, one of your siblings or your parents or somebody, and every year we say the same line over again, keep saying it. Don't forget that. Right? That's a tradition. If there was one particular point where everybody remembers there was one big family blow up, somebody stormed out, they left, it was horrible, it was like, disastrous, and every year we're like, oh, remember that Seder? So at the same point, don't give that up. Remember that dysfunctional Seder. Celebrate it. Think about it. Right? But I think it's okay to try to do something different, but I don't mean to the exclusion of the majority of it, which is supposed to be the same. The same tunes. Don't change them up all the time. You know, maybe for Howl, if you have a certain tune that you like, that you want to try something new. Changing it up even goes to how you dress. If you have off-white linen, you could be Pharaoh in 5 minutes. Right? Taupe, it works. You don't have to go so fancy. Gratitude exercises. Think about how much in the Seder is about Hakarat HaTov, thanking God for certain things. So my teacher is a prominent psychologist, Dr. David Kalkovitz, so we do this sometimes before Birkat HaMazon on Shabbos. You thank God for your food. One, you thank God for something that you have. Great thing to do at the table. A gratitude exercise. So everybody will go around the table and say one thing that they're grateful for. Easy to do. Again, it's new thing, but it doesn't, and it's not taking the the place of other stuff at your Seder, but it's another way to make it unique for this year. Stories. It's important to tell stories at the Seder. The whole story of the Seder, as you started with, was that whole idea of connection. But this is extremely powerful. There is a guy, his name is Bruce Feiler, he writes for the New York Times. He wrote this article. This article was March 15th, 2013. It's called The Stories That Bind Us. This New York Times article became viral. It exploded on the web. Because what he did an article based on two researchers at Emory University who found the following. They did the longitudinal study on kids. What affected their connection to their family over time? How do families stay together? What are the ingredients that are going to make kids successful, especially as it relates to their family? So they found something very simple and very fascinating. It's how well kids knew their family narrative. Kids who knew their family narrative better not only had stronger family structure later on in life, but in other social markers did much better. These researchers showed. So then there was a follow-up because there was such an unbelievable, overwhelming response to this that the researchers published an article. It got a little cut off here in the Huffington Post because people wanted to know, so how did they figure this out? So the answer is they had a survey. They asked kids, they did research. They asked kids 20 questions. And depending on how they scored on these 20 questions, that was kind of, they called it the DYK, the Did You Know? Do you know, did you know about your family? If you did well, that meant that you had a high likelihood that you were going to have this trajectory. It doesn't mean, you know, you don't call your psychologist if your kid doesn't score well and be like, my life is messed up, whatever. It just means that this piece of it is missing. So I Xeroxed it for you. Marshall Duke, he's the lead author of this study from Emory. And look at these questions. So last year at the Seder, I actually introduced these questions for my kids as part of the Seder. And even if, you know, you're not running the Seder, think about how you can introduce your family Jewish narrative or any aspect of your family narrative. I think about this. Do we know the answers to these questions? And the research shows how this impacts. You talk about, we go back, where do we start? For those who are still awake, where we started? Why do we make the Seder? Well, we're trying to tell the story of the Jewish people. We're trying to tell the story of our family, of our Jewish narrative. So we should be able to, do I know where my grandparents grew up? Do I know where my parents were married? Do you know some things that happened to your mom and dad when they were in school? Do you know the national background of your family? These are really interesting questions that, you know what? Our kids might be 2 years old or 3 years old. That's when you're going to start. When our kids are 10 years old, that's when we're going to make sure that they know the answer to these questions. Where did my mom go to school? I should know that. I should know where my mom went to school. I should know where my grandparents came from. Are they Ashkenazi or Sephardi? We should know those questions. And those questions are going to impact how you grow up. But it's also true not just for personal stories, it's also true for national stories. We have to know that we're part of the Jewish people and that the Jewish people have a history. And, you know, this year, the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem. We should know that. We talk about Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim. We should know that this year, Jerusalem is different than it was 50 years ago.
You know those three guys are still alive?
Yes,
And they're reuniting them. Oh, Jerusalem?
Yes.
And Yerushalayim. On the 50th anniversary of the reunification. There's a PR online. Sorry for interrupting.
No,
I'm trying to get a picture. I'm like so moving. I saw this PR piece. They have the three of them at the Kotel again as old men walking together, and they're celebrating it with
So stories are it's good. So stories are important. So to summarize, we talked about incentives, we talked about empowering, having games, songs, posters, changing it up, and ultimately preparing is the most important thing. So my hope is that when you walk away tonight, you'll feel like I have some ideas. Now I'm going to spend 5 minutes to really prepare. I'll give you one last thing. This you should keep away from comments because it's great to bring to your Seder. We prepared this year these little Pesach companions. We printed them on a cloth type material that I spilled water on it to make sure it's water resistant. So you don't have to worry that it's going to get ruined when all the other papers get spilled on. This is just like a little takeaway that you can bring to your Seder as a reminder of some questions or some ideas, or also, you know, how much. I'm thinking like, I'm sitting at my Seder, I remember, how much do I have to drink? So if you look on the back of this sheet, you have a little cheat sheet with measurements, some questions for kids, questions for you, an idea on the text, something for you to take to your Seder, and you don't have to worry that it's going to get ruined by some guy spilling your water on it or whatever. I didn't try wine, but hopefully all these things together, you put them in your folder, and it'll make for a more meaningful Pesach.